Welcome to Because I Want to Know, the podcast where I interview guests about their crazy unique occupations or life experiences. I'm your host, Leslie Fear. So let's get into it, shall we? Hey everyone, today I'm joined with Lindsay Alexander. She is former CIA. I had her on my podcast, gosh, I think 3 or 4 years ago. She's back. She's got information for us, I hope. Lindsay, welcome back to the show.
Yeah, thank you. It's so good to be back. I appreciate you having me back.
Oh, listen, you might know some information that my listeners may want to hear. So can you kind of tell me what you did in the CIA when you were there?
Yeah, so I was a senior targeting officer and the director of operations, people, places, and things of interest. And so I did that and kind of rose through the ranks there on the operations side of the house for well over a decade. Wow. I spent a considerable time overseas, Eastern Europe, Middle East, Central Asia, those areas. Before I worked for the CIA, I actually worked for the FBI and was an analyst there and focused on counterterrorism. So I have a really weird background.
Yeah, well, you have a very interesting and fascinating background, in my opinion, because you had clearance for things that maybe the lame person wouldn't have. So I wanted to talk to you about some things coming up that have been coming up in our news. Most recently, the USS Lincoln, the big aircraft carrier. What are your thoughts about how they were living there?
Oh, gosh. It sounds terrible. Yeah. And I actually have a military buddy of mine that was stationed on there, but has since left and had said that when he was there, it was not a great experience. And it appears to have gotten far worse. Like what we're hearing appears to be the truth. And it is interesting because military personnel, when they're stationed on ships, aircraft, etc., you don't hear them talk much about what's going on there regardless. So the conditions have to be probably far worse than even what we're hearing for them to be outspoken about it and telling their friends and family about it back home. So it's just catastrophic. And it's sad to see the administration gaslight it in a way. Yeah. And it makes me hope that at least the commanders, you know, on the ground, on the ship, are doing what they can. Because sometimes you have like the Secretary of Defense or Secretary of War, whatever is now Hegseth, and the person in the White House, you know, they're out of touch with what's actually occurring. Yeah. And you hope that what they're saying doesn't really reflect what is being done to help the people there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Listen, I was appalled. And you have way better insight on it than I do. Plus, you've been to those regions before, so you know how the weather is and how, you know, things like that work over there. You know how some of the governments run. And I heard that Iran was even trying to send them some supplies and they were getting denied. Is that correct?
I'm not 100% sure about that, but I would say that should it be occurring, I could see Iran trying to do that. Yeah. And I can also see reasons for why they would deny it as well, because they might be helping, but they...
That's true.
They're not always there to help. And so they could use that as an opportunity, unfortunately. But I'm sure there are, like if it's a U.S. military ship, essentially, which it is, they most likely have other countries represented on that ship, like the Brits, the Canadians and such. And so, you know, their governments are doing something or trying to do something as well. Like, someone's trying to do something.
Wow. So also, you know, the war is illegal. We already know that. He did it without government approval or Congress's approval. So what are your thoughts on the escalation of this, since you kind of know how some of this stuff works? You know, is there a best case scenario here?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. It is incredibly scary. Actually, I was in the direct region in a country that Iran allies itself with. Yeah. You know, before I left the agency, and there were times there where it was a little, no one wanted to see what is happening now happen. And as much as like you want change in Iran, this is not the way to go about it, in my opinion. And I think there's been global ramifications on it, but there's also a lot of the ramifications and direct issues that the American public might not see or be privy to with the media, where you have like our diplomats on the ground in neighboring countries.
Yeah.
Are there, and they're probably scared for their lives every day walking out trying to see if they're, depending on where they are, and things like that to consider. But I think, I don't know if I'm answering your question, but you asked like kind of where we see this going, essentially.
Yeah.
Oh gosh, I want to say someplace good.
I know, me too.
And like it will be okay and it will end peacefully. But if something doesn't change where the U.S., because like the U.S. is going into this losing allies, like no friends wanting to assist, which is never a good thing.
Right.
And so, and they're going up against a rather significant country. And so it, things like this doesn't normally end too well unless we go hands off in a way, like unless we decide to walk it back and say, we're sorry.
Exactly.
And do that just because of like, there's so many ramifications already, like with the transportation of, you know, and shipping of goods and services and stuff using the Strait of Hormuz, and not only the diplomatic relations regionally, but like Iran and Russia have a huge diplomatic relationship, and things like that need to be considered with other conflicts going on, and as well as, you know, the safety of Americans here.
Right. Yeah.
So.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, I'm like, you know, I interview people that are astrologists, and one of them said it's not going to end according to astrology until like 2031, which, okay, that's scary. But I also think because they're so tired of dealing with who's in the White House right now, Trump, they're like, we don't even want to deal with you guys. So I'm hoping that once we get somebody new in, even if we switch the houses to Democrat, maybe there's someone who can talk some sense into this situation at the get-go. But I know there's intelligence, like there's CIA and FBI probably working on this, hence why he took a different plane back, and they're talking all about that now from Turkey. How would they handle that? Like when they knew that he was a possible target on Air Force One, would the CIA or FBI or both kind of be the ones handling that?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So it would first go to Secret Service. Okay. It would be their responsibility to address that concern. I know, like in my own experience, I've been at the CIA and handled threats directly involving the president, and having like you immediately bring in Secret Service, and they're the ones that direct how that's going to go down. So the decision to use a different plane would have most likely come from them.
Okay.
There would have been input, obviously, depending on what the threat was and how credible it was, but the decision would have been based with them. Right. I will also say, as someone who has, I left under the Trump administration, the first one, and there were times where he would make his own decisions and against the advice of Secret Service, CIA, like the entire intel community, and it's the president. So you have to go with it. And for the most part, when it comes to those things. And so I could see that also being a situation here too.
Yeah.
It's just crazy. And now he's got this woman, Natalie, I can't think of her last name, who's been Harp. Yeah. That's been kind of his pacifier, or they call her the diaper genie, which is kind of funny because I don't know if you've had kids, but that's what we used to put our diapers in. It was called a diaper genie. I thought that was really funny. But yeah, and she didn't even have a clearance for the first, I don't know, year or so. I don't even know if that's right, but I know it was a long time. And how is this happening? Is it just because, like you said, he's the president, he's going to do what he wants to do, he's going to tear the East Wing out, he's going to try to build a ballroom, he's supposedly building bunkers? I mean, what the heck is going on, girl?
I know. No, I feel like I ask myself that as well. like every day. I know, I don't mean to like talk a lot about this, but when I was there the first term, let me know if you just want me to shut up about it.
No.
But
that's why I'm interviewing you, man. I want to know everything.
That's fair. But during the first term, I would be in the office, and a lot of people, whether or not they voted for him or not, would be like, what in the world is going on? Why are we allowing XYZ to occur? And what it would come down to, depending on the situation, was there appeared to be like a close circle
Yeah.
Around Trump. And when you look at like my academic background through my master's degree looks at how like authoritarian types of governments take hold.
Yeah.
And you see it done this way in the sense where I'm not entirely sure, but there's a psychological term for this as well, but I can't remember it right now.
Yeah.
That it's similar to the bystander effect, just at a bigger scale where you have the people that can actually do something or appear to be able to do something are looking around, like just pointing at the other individual. Like, shouldn't someone else come in and stop this?
Right.
Even if it's, you know, Mike Johnson or Susan Collins could stop this, or like so many people before him could have prevented this from occurring. And no one does, because like there is the question of, did we reach the line? Did we cross the line yet? Of like, are we now in a very, very bad place? Like, because we still have elections, our power is still working.
Right.
I go outside, I don't see the things burning down, unless you live in a wildfire area, you don't see that.
Yeah.
And for the person that lives in the middle of America, just doesn't see that direct ramification. So it's hard to get those individuals and everyone to like call their congressman, vote differently, become more active, do things that will actually stop this, or to unfreeze themselves mentally. Because I know a lot of people right now are, normally is what happens in those countries where these types of governments take hold, and they do it effectively because they impact the economy. That's usually one of the first things they do, because that will stress people out in a way that benefits them. And so they're, not only are they focused on paying their next bill, and focus on, you know, putting food on the table and trying to do that, that takes their focus away from what is going on politically and in the White House and things like that.
Yeah.
And it's a really awful, effective strategy. Is that's another reason why we're where we're at.
Yeah, exactly. I think a lot of people, though, are kind of leaving or not supporting this situation. A lot of it is because of the war, and it's not some kind of conflict. It's actually a war, people. And we're not supposed to be there. We weren't even supposed to be in. This is not our war to fight. I don't know why we even got ourselves involved. Well, I do. I think Israel did it. But anyway, I was going to ask you, so if you had to choose, while we're on the subject of, you know, our security here in the United States, what are your biggest fears? I mean, do you think that we are kind of a sitting target? Do you think we need to just live our lives and don't live in fear and just know we're probably okay? Or what do you think?
That's a good question. And it's interesting because like my siblings asked me this recently too, trying to figure out ways in their life and how to have that balance. The way I see it is, I think there should be a level of awareness that everyone should have. Like, we are in a different time, like regarding the war with Iran, there is more of a threat with Iran doing something internally than there was with Afghanistan, Iraq, etc. And I think a lot of people put those countries all in the same box because they're like, oh, it's, you know, Southeast Asia and that part of the world, or the Middle East, and they're all the same. And that's not the case. And so there is like an understanding that Iran does have capabilities to, you know, do something should they want to. But that being said, I don't think that is our greatest threat or way to be in fear or anything like that at this time. And I will caveat with, given the current state of how things are, it's really bad, but it's not reached the level yet where I think Iran is also kind of still in shock. So they're not, they know once they pull a plug in the US, then like shit hits the fan. And so I think that's why that hasn't occurred. I think the greatest threat or the greatest national security issue at this time is our current administration, because that is causing more divisions. And as we get closer to the midterms, not sure how that's gonna go, honestly. And I think that's where people should be more concerned, because we still have like the threats right now are from our own, essentially. And that's awful. I hate saying, like, it's awful. It shouldn't be the case. Like, we shouldn't have to worry about that. But I've had friends and family be chased down by ICE. and things and have those situations. And I think that is the greatest issue that people should be concerned about at this time.
Yeah, just our own government, you know, going against us, because I do think that's happening now. And it has been for a while since he took over this Project 2025 thing. But, you know, I'm worried about this AI data center stuff, you know, and taking over, you know, so I mean, we've got over 400 in Texas right now alone, and I think it's more like 600, and they're still wanting to build more. And I don't understand why is it so quick that they want to do this, but why do they want to do it in the first place? You know, I can Google something, and if it takes 2 seconds, I can wait 5 or I can wait 6. I don't care. And I don't know why it has to be. Do you have any insight on that?
No, it's also, I keep saying it's a great question. All these are great questions. I do find it a little alarming about how fast the movement is. I'm in Pennsylvania, and I know they're working on building like near 100 here or so. But there's a lot of stuff happening in the courts here, so I'm not entirely sure what the exact number is yet. But it's still frightening to see like how fast it is occurring. And it does make me question, like, you know, there's those conspiracies out there where I've never been a believer of, where they say that, you know, we all know the wealthier segment of society isn't really the best morally. And there are conspiracies out there that they might be trying to do this to like overtake the population or lower the population in a way, because civil war would lower the population, starvation would, like drought would, all the things that these AI data centers can cause. And it would make them a lot of money in the meantime. And I think it's just interesting to see that maybe that's happening. I can't say for sure, but it is incredibly concerning, to say the least, that they're sprouting up very quickly. I wish I knew more about this now, but I have been looking into trying to see if there are any common denominators behind each of these data centers and like the legal side of things in each of the states, because I think that would be interesting to just figure out. Another reason they could be sprouting up is just based on the election time frame. Trying to get it all done before the midterms or before 2028, should those occur. But yeah, I share the concern, and I would imagine a lot of those in the national security apparatus would also share a similar concern too.
Yeah, and there are people here trying to fight it as well, and they're actually outlawing it in some of the counties around us right now, at least. So that's good, because it's just, you know, it's taking the water. It's you know, we're on our own grid here. So, you know, any kind of extra on our grid isn't great. And so we're trying to fix all that. But let's talk about some fun stuff. Let's talk about aliens. So tell me everything you know about aliens, girl.
Oh my gosh. I probably dated one at some point. You never know. Some interesting people in DC. I mean, I've always been of the assumption that it is arrogant to think we're the only ones out there.
Right.
And I think that whether or not they're aliens here currently, there's definitely most likely like other species of animals that we haven't uncovered yet that we might be considering to be aliens or extraterrestrial figures.
Yeah.
That's a possibility. But I do think like no one can definitively say that there are no aliens, because they're just crazy.
And I didn't know if maybe in your line of work, if you had any kind of talk about it with someone else, or you knew some intel about it, or that just didn't come across what you did.
It wasn't something that was like a big part of what I worked on or anything. And like, I can't speak too much about it, but like, I can say, you know, it's not like the government isn't looking into that as well and researching what that could look like from like a humanitarian perspective, from a relational perspective, and all of that. I think that's something that's fair to say, that the government has ways and is actively trying to determine what other types of life might look like.
Wow. Okay. That's it. That's exciting. Okay. So, and they have pretty much admitted they don't know what a lot of the stuff that they bring forward, like when they were sitting in front of Congress saying, this is stuff we don't know what it is, guys. So it must be something without us having any kind of intel on that, because they don't know what it is. They didn't build those machines they're seeing, or those drones or whatever, those plasma orbs they're seeing. They didn't do any of those. So that's kind of the evidence, right?
Yeah, I think that's most of what, like, the public evidence that they have displayed. And it is interesting to see the interviews in front of Congress where you have, like, reputable, credible Air Force and other military members and other members of, like, even the intel community, and even, like, regular pilots coming out and saying, we saw this, like, and no one can explain it. And it is just fascinating. And I know recently, it's been interesting to hear there's a theory, well, not a theory, there's information out there indicating they could be coming from the oceans. And so I think right. that is interesting, because we haven't really explored the ocean.
No, we know less about the ocean than we do our own space, and we know very little about space. So, but I was going to ask you, because I do believe we have them. Do you think, aliens anyway, do you think that they a lot of times don't really want to disclose too much because it would really affect maybe our religious community too much, or it might make people a little afraid or whatever? Do you think that's one of the reasons why they're really holding back?
I think it could. And then I think you'd have more people doing dumb things as well. Oh. Like, should they know that it's there and where it might be coming from?
Yeah.
Like, a lot of people tend to want to take it on themselves, and you don't want to have people put themselves in unnecessary danger either.
Right.
Like, trying to take that on. So it's easier to keep things vague, I think, in many cases. Like, and I still see it in the news when something vague happens or super vague is being portrayed in the media. You know, like, there's probably more to it.
Yeah.
But it's easier to present that way so that it doesn't alarm the population. I know whether or not that's good or not is a different argument, but
right.
you don't want people going out there just shooting at the sky, or going right. and to an ocean and, you know, not coming back, or things like that
yeah.
either.
Well, and the thing is, especially in the United States, when everybody and their mother have a gun. So,
exactly. you know? Yeah, especially in Texas, you know?
Right? And right? It's true. I'm in Texas. I know. But yeah. like, but let me ask you this. So this is just a weird scenario, but I thought, you know, you would be the one to ask. Let me set it up. Let's say there is an asteroid coming straight for Earth, and it's going to happen in 5 years. They know it's going to impact in 5 years. And they're hoping they have some kind of technology that could steer it away or blow it up or whatever. But if they don't, would something like that ever be divulged before we could do anything to prepare ourselves? Is that why, do you think the bunkers are coming? I'm just curious. I'm just throwing a bunch of crap out there to see what you think.
No, it's totally interesting. It's funny because I think my mom has asked me something similar too.
Okay.
And she doesn't like my answers. I don't think we would know to an extent. Like, the scientific community, a good example of this is climate change right now.
Yes.
Like, you have scientists over the last longer than decade,
yeah.
but like 20 years sounding yes. the horn on and the alarm on
Al Gore.
It.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And everyone's just like, immediately it gets repressed, it gets laughed at, or it gets denied, or just kind of pushed down the media. It's hard to find.
Yeah.
Things like that happen. And then all of a sudden, we're now 20 years forward, and we're experiencing the things that were discussed. And it's kind of, you know, similar. So it's not like we wouldn't know something was coming. It just wouldn't be the headline
yeah.
on the news until it was inevitable. Mm-hmm. Because you also don't want to, like, one of the main things you're taught when you're working on the national security side is, like, you really just don't want to cause civil unrest in right. any way. Like, that right. is just catastrophic. And so in order to prevent a huge civil unrest with millions of people, you wouldn't tell them
yeah.
an inevitable thing is happening that they, you know, they couldn't prevent until later, because yeah. you don't want them to loot the mom and pop store down the street and then to not care about laws and stuff like that in the yeah. structure of society. And so does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does. But what are your thoughts about the bunkers? What do you think about all that?
Yeah. So I think, I mean, we all know that those that have a lot of wealth or power or both are definitely building bunkers, whether or not they're doing it in the United States. I know I've heard a few being built, you know, in Hawaii, in Alaska, in Fiji, that area of the world.
Because it's almost like, do they know more than we know? I mean, what's going on, you know?
I honestly think it is for... I lean more towards the theory of civil unrest. Mm. I think they're doing it because they see the status of not just the United States, but how there's a lot going on worldwide. Like there's a huge water crisis in the Middle East right now. And in India and Southeast Asia, and you have people migrating, and that's a significant issue. And then you have the wars, conflicts, the genocides, all of those occurring on top of the natural resource situation. And so normally you eventually see conflict from that. And I think the bunkers are for the wealthy to wait it out. Unfortunately, and it's terrible.
And you know, it's funny though, Lindsay, because I'm thinking, you know, when you have that much power because you have so much money, I would think it would just innately make you more scared of your future because they think people are going to come after them. I think they're also just really paranoid people, you know?
Yep. Oh, they 100% are. Yep.
Because it's just, it's like, what is going on? And, you know, like I said, I'm just so over all this. I'm hoping it all changes fairly quickly for all of us because it's just getting worse. And I've talked about this a little bit on the podcast with other people, mostly people that have abilities and those kinds of things. But it's always good to have somebody that just has a background in this kind of thing that can say, this is where I'm coming from. This is what I see. This is how I see it. And you're not trying to spread theories and you're not trying to spread misinformation. You taught me all about misinformation and disinformation on the podcast before. And misinformation is just really not realizing you're saying something wrong. And disinformation is intentionally saying something incorrect, right?
Yes, that's correct. Okay. Yes.
And I think there's a lot of disinformation going on right now.
There is. And a lot of people, like when people are scared, whether it's, it doesn't matter what political side you're on or anything, like both sides take advantage of fear. And so if you're fearful of putting food on the table at the same time, and you're fearful of the government, that invokes fear. And people that are very fearful are easier to control, manipulate.
Yes.
And it sucks. And so both sides do it. Whether or not you're conservative, liberal, it doesn't matter. We're seeing it on both sides. And I think like it's very important to remember. I know a lot of what I say is like doom and gloom, but there's like little pockets of hope.
Yeah.
I know in Pennsylvania, PBC did a documentary in Bucks County. Mm. Which is right near the Pennsylvania-New Jersey border, essentially, but it's a very purple area, but leans more red in certain ways.
Yeah.
And they did a documentary about how, like, the neighbors are interacting with each other and how people are coming to the table and trying to find ways to not be divisive and angry towards the other.
Yeah.
And trying to find common ground. And I think that's what we need to see kind of across the board.
Yeah.
And I know other communities are doing it too, but it's just, it's very interesting and telling. And I think that is what will get us through this quicker, the faster we are able to figure out common ground and move forward together will help us, whether or not we're dealing with a political situation or a climate crisis, etc. Like you're going to need community during that time. And so like being in conflict isn't going to help. And they want us in conflict because then they can go live in their luxury bunkers and do that.
Exactly. And that's the thing. I just, you know your neighbors. You know, we've gotten to the point where we rely so much on the internet and our phones and games and watching movies. And don't get me wrong, that's, there's nothing wrong with that. But I didn't know, you know, my neighbors in my other house until I went out and sought them out. Of course, our kids all played together, so it was fine. But you have to really make an effort to go meet people now in your neighborhoods. And it's never bad, you know, and maybe that'll bring you together with people you never thought you'd understand or like at all. And then all of a sudden your neighbors and you're like, listen, I like George down the street, or I really like Carol down the street. I had no idea they lived there and they think totally different than me. But I like them and I'm going to help them. And I'm going to reconsider what I think about what they like and what they don't like.
Yeah, exactly. And I know like a lot of people sometimes get stuck on the, you know, but they're racist, but they're bigoted, but they're this. Right. And it's like, yes, they probably are.
Yeah.
And you might be too in some ways. Sure. Like we all are, especially if we are like white presenting.
Yeah.
But the only way for those types of mentalities to change is to confront them in a peaceful-ish yeah. manner.
Yeah. You're not going to learn anything if you just stay in your bubble. And you stay in your echo chamber. And if you go out and meet people, and that's why I do the podcast. I mean, I know that I've gained a lot of listeners, and I think I've lost some listeners because they don't agree with me politically. And I try not to go one way or the other. I try to say, I want everyone to have healthcare. I want everyone to not have to pay for being human. You know, I mean, just having a bed to sleep in at night and food to eat should be a human right, in my opinion. And everybody deserves that. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying you shouldn't work for what you get. But I also think there are times when you can't always do those things, but it doesn't mean you're less of a person and you don't deserve those things, you know?
Right. Everyone should have like their basic needs met. Yeah, no, I completely agree. And even if like, you know, I forgot who said it, but it was such a good like way to say it. And I'm not going to say it right. But yeah. even if like your neighbor doesn't want you to have those things, you still want your neighbor to. And yes. it's like coming to that understanding. Like,
well, it's more of a show, don't tell. Show them how you could make their life better by giving. And instead of just yelling at them or telling them what you think, show them your humanity. Show them that you have love for everyone. You know, and I know that sounds really kind of cliche, but it's just the truth. You know, we're all in this together, whether you are on one side or the other. And anyway, Lindsay, you've been amazing. Thank you so much for talking to me about this because, you know, it's confusing and it's scary and it's nice to talk to someone who has a level head about it, you know?
Well, I appreciate it. And yeah, thank you so much for the opportunity.
You know what? If anybody has any questions for you or wants to get hold of you, do you have an email address or anything?
Yeah. So I have an email, disinfogal@gmail.com.
Okay.
It's all one word. Also, the same username on, I have it on TikTok, at all the social medias.
Nice.
Okay. Essentially. So yeah. you can reach out there too.
Yeah. You know, guys, Lindsay and I have been friends for years and she'll send me things or I'll like her comment or whatever. And I tell you, she's so grounded and so down to earth and she's not going to mince her words. She's going to tell you how it is. And that's what I like. And you're amazing. And I appreciate you so much for coming on the show, girl.
Oh, thank you so much. You're very kind.
Well, I love providing Because I Want to Know at no cost. So if you like what you heard, please leave me a 5-star review or you can just buy me a cup of coffee. It's kind of like a Patreon, but you don't have a monthly subscription and you can give whatever you feel led to give. I am a one-woman show and I do all of my scheduling and my interviewing and my editing. So just know your support is so greatly appreciated. And one more thing, I am a paranormal romance novelist and you can find all of my books on Amazon. Just look up my name. I'm very easy to find. Thank you guys again and I will see you next week.